Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on King of OX.
Rolling on here on KMOX, it is the Graybar Sports Open Line into the second hour of the program. We're a little bit more than an hour away from our coverage of St. Louis Cardinals baseball. They are in action tonight. They match up against the Los Angeles Dodgers for the second game of the season after they lose yesterday by a 7-1 score. We'll open up the phone lines, the text message line, the tweets, however you want to get in contact with the program. We'll open things up right now if you want to chime in, 314-436-7900. That's 314-436-7900 to call or text, or you can tweet at me at Matt Pauley on air, MattPauley on air. There was, I don't want to call it overreaction because I understand the reaction. It's not an overreaction if you get why the reaction is what it is, or I guess kind of. I understand why Cardinals fans feel the way they feel after yesterday's game. Yesterday's game looked eerily similar to what we saw a lot of last season. And I think that worries Cardinals fans, and rightfully so, because nobody wants to see this team, outside of maybe folks in Chicago and other NL Central cities, but no Cardinals fan, nobody's got an affinity for this team, wants to see this team going through what they went through last year. And they spent an offseason and then all of spring training trying to address the issues that occurred last year. You can agree, we talked about this yesterday, and I'm not just trying to repeat myself, but I'll say it one more time. You can agree or disagree with the moves that they made this offseason. That's fine. That's your prerogative. But I think what you can't really argue is that they did make the moves that they made with an eye on fixing some things that went wrong last year. That's why they did what they did with starting pitching. That's why they're doing what they're doing in the field, wanting to have more of a consistent group out there. That's not really going so great right now in terms of injuries, although they've got the same lineup for a second day in a row. That's why they added to the back end of the bullpen after all the blown saves last year. They did attempt to address the issues from last year. I know there's a lot of Cardinals fans who are yelling at their radio or their phones or however you're listening to me right now, and they're saying, well, they didn't do enough. They didn't do enough. And I've said it a million times, I wish they had another top-of-the-rotation starter to go along with Sonny Gray. And I am hopeful that if this team does remain in contention, as I expect them to do, that they're going to be able to find a way to add that guy at the deadline. That's not going to be cheap to do that. We have seen the cost of those kind of players. It is very, very challenging, especially where you have a million different teams that are vying for. There might be six or seven teams that really have no shot of the playoffs going into the month of July. And that means there's going to be a lot of teams having the discussion about whether or not they need to be buyers at the deadline. And when there's a lot more buyers than sellers, you don't have to go back to your college economics class to know this. There's a lot more buyers than sellers, the price is going to go up. So I don't think we can make any assumption about what this team can add at the deadline. But my hope would be that if they're in contention, they are able to add to the top of the rotation. First, they got to stay in contention. So maybe I'm putting the cart in front of the horse. They got to start winning some games. This is a really, really tough start to the season, but they got to start winning some games. 3-1-4, but they've only played one game. It's 1 of 162 against the best team in baseball. It's not the end of the world that they lost yesterday. Let's go to Mike, who has given us a call. Hey, Mike, you're on Sports Open Line.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing all right.
Hopefully Zach can change my attitude about this team tonight, but the apathy... I can't be the only fan that just really doesn't care too much about this season. I mean, the construction of the roster, even the 40-man roster, it's just mind-boggling what they've let go in recent years, who they've kept, the way that they seem to not give certain players a chance. I mean, I fully expect Yepes to freaking be an MVP this year. And they probably, if it hadn't been for the injuries to their guys in the outfield, the only real reason why I'm even interested, which is Victor Scott, probably wouldn't even have been on the freaking roster. And I don't know. Maybe you can address it. Talk me off the ledge, something. I don't know.
Yeah,
have
Mike.
A good day.
Yeah, sure. Appreciate the phone call. Understand the frustration. I bet if we would have continued having you on right there, you might maybe would have mentioned Mason Wynn as a reason to be excited as well, in addition to Victor Scott. Look, I think this young group moving forward with Scott, Wynn, Walker, Gorman, those four guys who are all still relatively young, if that's going to be the next era of Cardinals baseball, they're in pretty good shape. And they're in pretty good shape right now in terms of their hitting. The frustration about this team is largely based around their pitching. Have there been guys who have left the organization and have gone on to play very well at other spots? Yeah, like that. That goes without saying. Hello, Adolis Garcia. Hello, Randy Arozarena. Like we get it. Now, for a Garcia, as has been well documented, every team in baseball had the opportunity to pick him up, you know, free of charge, for lack of a better term, and they didn't. So the Cardinals weren't the only ones. But yeah, it doesn't look great when there are former Cardinals doing big things elsewhere. Juan Yepes was a guy who a lot of Cardinals fans are confused on why he was not given more of an opportunity, especially last year where there were opportunities to be had, and we'll see what he turns into. And if he does turn into a really good major league player now in another organization after the Cardinals didn't give him a chance, you do have to wonder why. Now, I'm not overly worried about that one because, again, I have a belief in what the Cardinals have from a position player group, and I think they're fine in that area right now. What's Dakota Hudson going to do? That's a pitcher who went elsewhere. I don't have super high expectations for him, but it would certainly, I think, stick a little bit if he goes on and performs well, because the Cardinals have a hard time developing pitching and really getting high level pitching out of guys that they've got coming up. That's why today's game with Zach Thompson, I think, is not today's game specifically, but just the Zach Thompson experience, however long it's going to be, for about 2 weeks before Sonny Gray gets back. That's why it's so important, because this organization has to show the ability to cultivate and develop high-end pitching. And they haven't done that, but there's a bunch of guys sitting in the wings right now. Thompson is here. Matthew Liberatore is here, although he may just be a relief pitcher now, which is, that's fine if that's what's going to happen. That next group includes a Michael McGreevy, a Gordon Graceffo, a TK Roby, eventually a Tink Hintz, all these guys. There are expectations that these players and these pitchers do perform at a fairly high level. We're going to take a break, and when we return, we're going to welcome onto the program our good friend Tamar Scher. She's going to be involved in a very cool event. We'll tell you all about it and get her thoughts on Cardinals opening day yesterday as well. That's all coming up in just a moment as we roll on with the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
This is America's Sports Voice, KMOX. This is my fight song. Take back my life
song. Prove I'm all right song. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. Matt Pauly coming your way till 8 o'clock. And then I'll take a lap, and about 8:15 I'll be back, and we've got Cardinals pregame tonight as they are going to have a 9-10 first pitch, Cardinals and Dodgers. We're going to go to the Quiver River Electric guest line right now. Welcome in one of our favorite people to be able to talk to. You see her on Channel 4 KMOV. She is Tamar Scher. You follow her on Twitter at Tamar_SHER. Tamar, great to talk to you. How are you?
Hey, Matt, you're one of my favorite people to talk to, so thanks for having me on tonight.
Yeah, you bet. Well, you're going to be involved in a really cool event. We're going to get to that in a second. But first off, general thoughts on what we saw from the Cardinals yesterday. It sure looked a whole lot like last year.
You took the words right out of my mouth. Yeah, felt a little doom and gloom, a little deja vu from last year. I know that wasn't the offensive production, only Paul Goldschmidt contributing on that front. I know the roster, of course, isn't what we expected it to be a month ago. There's a lot of injuries, especially in the outfield now. We know Sonny Gray would be on the injured list heading into this season. So definitely not the start that Cardinals fans wanted to see. But come on, it's the Dodgers, and they literally have every piece possible to make that a World Series contending team. So definitely a hard series to start with for the Cardinals, but they're going to want to come back and attack tonight and make that better, because three hits isn't going to cut it.
No, it's, and that's, but you alluded to it, that's a tough lineup in LA. I mean, just especially 1-5, there is no break. And when that group's coming up basically every other inning, you can never get around it. And even 1-9, they spent a lot of money, and there's a reason that they are the World Series favorite.
And Glasnow looked insane last night as well. If you got good pitching, as we've seen, if you have good pitching combined with incredible offensive strength, you're going to do well. And that's what the Dodgers showed yesterday. Of course, it's only game one of 162, so you can't really say a whole lot about the season based on that one game. But this is going to be – it's a late one for the Cardinals tonight at 9:10 start Central Time, but hopefully one that they can start to turn some things around.
As the person hosting the postgame show, I'm well aware of the timing of tonight's game.
It's insane, yes. Insane. But West Coast, you never know what you're going to get.
That's true. This weekend overall, when you think about St. Louis sports and what's going on, obviously the Cardinals opening up the season, City's playing this weekend, Battlehawks getting underway. You got the NCAA hockey championships going on here, Illinois basketball advanced. This is a fantastic St. Louis sports weekend.
It's literally insanity. And then you talk about Illinois moving on to the Elite Eight and what that does for this area. I know there's a lot of Illini fans listening, I'm sure. So it is just basically March is really fun for us here in St. Louis. You've got everything going on. Blues still in the hunt for that wild card spot, so we're keeping up with that. And it is an electric weekend we have. We're going to have it all. We have a late night show on Saturday nights. We're going to break everything down, but I think our head's going to be spinning watching all the madness and fun happening tomorrow.
Yeah, I make fun of the fact that I've got a late night tonight with the NCAA tournament and so many of the games on Channel 4. I'm sure you guys have had some late nights as well here recently.
Oh, yeah. We're not going on till well after 10 o'clock tonight, probably more like an 11 start time because of all these lovely games. But I can't lie. College basketball is my favorite part of the year. I was an Indiana Hoosier graduate, so I know my Hoosiers aren't in the tournament, but any kind of March Madness college basketball tournament play is my jam.
What, was Indiana women playing today? Did they lose to South Carolina? Did I get that right?
Yes, they lost. Don't bring up the heartbreak.
Sorry.
But, of course, South Carolina, that's another hard team. I really don't think many people can beat them.
Yeah, I mean, they're the gold standard right now when it comes to women's basketball. And, you know, moving over to the women's side of things, when you think about women's basketball, you're thinking right now about Caitlin Clark, as she has all of a sudden become really like a top 10 athlete in the United States when you think about recognizability. I was in Iowa a couple weekends ago, and no, I mean, you couldn't go anywhere without hearing a reference to Caitlin Clark. I was doing an event where she had a bobblehead there, and it was being bid
wow.
for, and people were looking for it. It's really, it's, and I've always been a fan of women's basketball. I broadcast a lot of women's basketball in my career. It is very cool to see an athlete like her bring in so many more people to watch this version of the game. That's fantastic.
Don't you love it? I actually was the women's basketball beat reporter for Indiana when I was there. I did some Big Ten Network Student U games as a sideline reporter. I also was on the beat for one of our student television stations. And to see the growth over the years in the stands, Matt, it's just incredible. I have always been a women's basketball fan, but to just see the growth of what the fandom has looked like over the past couple of years is remarkable. Caitlin Clark really helping in that factor. Everyone's going to want her. Everyone's going to want to see where she goes in the WNBA draft. And she has just done wonders for the game itself, not just for women, but the entire college basketball landscape at large.
I am curious if she's going to have the kind of impact on the WNBA, because the fan base for women's college basketball and the fan base for WNBA basketball, I think, is a little bit different. And I'll be very interested to see if she brings a lot of fans with her to the WNBA.
I would assume so. I would assume that's how it would be. I know Jackie Young, who's a big name in the WNBA, she was from the area that I was covering when I was in Evansville, Indiana. She's so beloved. She was from Princeton, Indiana, or she is from Princeton, and they love her. She has a huge following. So hopefully with the national fandom that Caitlin Clark has brought this year, that she does bring some of those fans into the WNBA to see, okay, what can she continue to do? What kind of barriers can she continue to break? Because she's broken literally every record, men's and women's. It's just incredible to watch.
Absolutely. Tamar Scherer is continuing to join us. You're going to be involved in a really cool event that the Blues are going to be hosting. It's going to be coming up tomorrow. It's a women in sports panel that you're going to be moderating, and there's a lot of different women who are either sports executives or athletes, and you're going to be discussing a number of things with them. It's a $10 donation to Girls on the Run. People can watch the Blues morning practice, then there's a light breakfast, and then the panel discussion after that. Talk me through what you're expecting out of this event coming up tomorrow.
First of all, I'm so incredibly honored the Blues asked me to moderate this conversation. Talk about some powerful women. We have a representative from the Blues, Cardinals, and City SC, a Olympic gold medalist as well for women's ice hockey. It's going to be a great group of incredible women. I know we already have over 100 people registered. We still have some more spots if you want to go on that Blues website to register for the discussion. But basically, we're going to talk about, you know, being a woman in sports, either the hurdles that they've gone through, how they got to where they are today. Some of these women, you know, they didn't know what kind of opportunities were there for them. I think one of them said in her bio that she thought the only opportunity really was a GM, to work her way up as a GM. And then she realized when she got her first internship that the opportunities were endless if she continued to work in the sport of her choice and to work in the industry, because as I've quickly found out, being a woman in sports, the opportunities are endless, and you can even pave your way and make your own positions, as there are for men as well. But I think that this will be a really cool group to see what life is like behind the scenes, and they're going to give us some really cool insight into that.
Yeah, I'm a dad of a 5-year-old daughter. I've got another daughter on the way, so I'm all in on being a girl dad. And I'm a big believer on the whole, you know, if you can see it, you can be it sort of thing. And I'm, you know, she's going to be inundated with sports stuff simply because I'm her dad, and maybe she's going to go in that direction. If she doesn't, that's totally fine. She can go follow whatever passion she has. But it means something to me that I know that we're living in a world right now where she's got a better opportunity to see examples like you and many others of what maybe she'll want to do growing up.
And what's super special is that it's only continuing to grow. There's only more women that want to be working in sports and realize that they have opportunities in sports. And there's so much equality in that. I think it's only getting stronger day by day as you see more women popping up in either play-by-play roles, color analyst roles. In Major League Baseball especially, you're seeing a lot of that. You're seeing a lot of that even when you're watching these college basketball games. It is so inspiring for me. I know when I was growing through the sports industry, and I'm still continuing to grow in it, those women and those friendships I've created along the way of other women in sports have been so deep and strong because we can just look each other in the eye and realize we've both been through similar things, and we've both kind of paved a way for other women. And I just think it's fabulous. I can't wait for the discussion tomorrow to see what it brings and what kind of people are there in the audience who we might be able to inspire.
Yeah, really, really cool. I don't know if you saw Jenny Kavnar, who's now going to be doing the Oakland A's games on TV. She got her headphones and like her mute box and I think her credential sent to the Baseball Hall of Fame yesterday after she did the first game and became the, you know, first time that a woman has been in a full-time play-by-play role for a Major League Baseball team. So I thought that was pretty cool that the Baseball Hall of Fame was interested in those things.
You just gave me the chills. It's unbelievable. I love that. It's only going to continue to grow. She's one of the first, and I can't believe, and I'm so grateful she paved the way for so many others to follow her.
She is Tamar Scherr. You see her on Channel 4 KMOV. Tamar, thanks so much for the time. Have a great time doing the panel tomorrow. I'm sure it's going to go great, and we'll see you and talk to you real soon.
Thanks, Matt. Looking forward to the next time we speak.
Awesome. Very good. There's Tamar Scherr joining us on the program. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll switch gears. Clayton Truter's going to join us. Wrote a book. It gets into college basketball, actually, in the Boston area and the impact that some individuals from there have had on the game overall. It's an interesting book, interesting premise that he went with, and we'll get more details about that coming up in just a moment as we continue with the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Your home of the Cardinals.
Arenado swings and hits it deep to left field. That ball is out of here.
The Billikens.
Jumper. Yes! Billikens win!
The Chiefs.
Touchdown! Kansas City!
We are America's sports voice, KMOX.
It's a Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. Have about 20-25 minutes left in the program. We will take you till 8 o'clock this evening. 8 o'clock news, and then about 8:15, we're going to jump into coverage of Cardinals baseball. 9:10 first pitch, 8:15 for the pregame as the Cardinals and the Dodgers play game 2 of the season after the Cardinals lose yesterday by a 7-1 score. We are going to go to the Quiver River Electric guest line right now, and we're very happy to welcome on to the program Clayton Truter. He is an author who wrote Rick Pitino, Jim Calhoun, Gary Williams, and the Forgotten Cradle of Basketball Coaches. Boston Ball is the name of the book, and then that's the subtitle. He joins us right now. Clayton, thanks so much for taking some time with us today. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on, Matt.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. This is an interesting book and kind of an interesting kind of, I don't know, sub-note when it comes to college basketball, because obviously I mentioned Pitino, Calhoun, and Williams. Those are three of the greatest coaches to do it. Calhoun just retired somewhat recently. Same thing with Williams. Pitino still going strong. But your book really focuses on how these three guys, their journeys largely started in a fairly close geographic region there in the Boston area.
Yeah, I view this as a secret origin story for modern college basketball. during the 1980s with the Celtics dynasty going on, in the shadows you have Rick Pitino at Boston University, Gary Williams at Boston College, and Jim Calhoun at Northeastern, all of them leading their programs to the NCAA tournament and different levels of success. This is happening fairly anonymously. BC drew fairly well as a Big East school, but the other two programs, BU and Northeastern, had a few hundred people at a lot of the games. These are all three coaches who go on to the Hall of Fame. I came upon the idea for the book while I was a graduate student in Boston, and I'm a lifelong basketball junkie. And while going to games at all these schools, it occurred to me that you had three Hall of Fame careers starting roughly simultaneously in Boston. Three guys who go on and they win six national titles, get to 14 Final Fours, win 2,300 games. But nobody seems to ever talk about how there was this very particular moment when they were all just learning their trade in Boston at roughly the same time.
As they were in that same area around the same time, did they have much of a relationship with each other?
Calhoun and Pitino did in particular, because Boston University and Northeastern were in the same conference. As a result of the Big East coming into being in the late 70s, all of college basketball in the Northeast blew up, which was at a very amorphous organization called the ECAC. A league called the ECAC North formed, which included some Boston area schools, some of the New England state universities, and then kind of randomly a couple of schools in Western New York who had nowhere else to go. And BU and Northeastern were the cream of the crop in that league, and they developed a very intense rivalry in Boston.
Look, I get that coaches move on from places, and as we're watching the NCAA tournament right now, very few of us know about the previous stops for most of these coaches. But you bring up a good point about these three guys all being in the same area at the same time and how it has impacted college basketball so much. Why is this story that you go through so well in this book, why is this something that maybe is not more talked about and widely known?
I think it's because Boston, despite being famous for its colleges, is perceived as a pro sports town. You have a lot of little colleges, basically, that have the appeal to maybe their alumni and their current students, but don't have the broad appeal of, say, a big state university in a college town in Ann Arbor, Michigan, or Madison, Wisconsin, or a town like that. So pro sports certainly gets the focus. College sports has always been kind of under the radar in town, and despite these teams all having success, it didn't get a lot of note. One of the most important aspects of the book is, I think, a stylistic impact on the game that these three coaches had. During the 1970s, college basketball became very dominated by big men, whether it was Jabbar or Bill Walton or Lanier. There was a range of big guys who became the force in college basketball. Even out of the city of Boston itself, you have Patrick Ewing coming out in this time period. None of these schools were capable of recruiting these guys. To compete, they adopted very much small ball styles of basketball. They were pressing, they were trapping, they were running fast breaks. And this became a pathway to success for them, taking an alternative route in terms of what was popular in college basketball at the time.
And you look at basketball now, we are in a world right now, obviously there's big men out there, but the game is so guard heavy now. It is there's a lot of positionless basketball going on. In many ways, what they were doing there was a precursor to what we're seeing now.
Very much so. I mean, people talk about Zach Edey as being this anomaly now. In the 70s, every team had a guy exactly like that. They may not have been quite as skilled as he was, but that was really just bang it in there to a guy like that was the style of most of the major programs during the time period. Even UCLA, which was this home of the fast break and the press and all this kind of stuff, all of a sudden, once they got the big men, that became their style of play. So in many ways, you have these schools in Boston having a secret basketball revolution in the very early 1980s, which ends up going and shaping a lot of the play that goes on. Pitino furthers this in particular in his next college stop. He goes from BU to being an assistant for Hubie Brown with the Knicks to coaching at Providence, where he's really the first adapter of the three-pointer in major college basketball. He sees this rule change is coming in. Everybody else is fighting it. He looks at his guards. He's got Billy Donovan, who goes on to a great coaching career, of course, Delray Brooks, Pop Lewis, and he says in the preseason, if you guys take a shot inside the perimeter, you're running 5 miles. So this team just spent a tremendous amount of time at Providence preparing to shoot three-pointers. They were the best team in the country at it, and it got them to the Final Four out of nowhere in 1987.
And that's another thing that's true about today. You watch the NBA, you see a bunch of three-point shooters, and the two-point mid-range shot has been completely negated now as analytically a very bad shot to take.
Absolutely. One thing I did, it was just go back and watch any of these games from this time period I could find, and just how high quality the mid-range jump shooting it was in the early 1980s, even in kind of mid-major college basketball, it was striking. It seemed like that kind of shot was much better when the players in that time period than it is now. Certainly the three-point shots. I mean, you have big men who shoot three-pointers exquisitely now, so it's a very different feel, but that aspect of the game has certainly been lost.
When it comes to Boston's love of basketball, like you said, we think about the Celtics, but when you think about the history of some of these collegiate programs and the history that they've had, not just with these three coaches, but certainly the programs have had success and had success recently, how much does this era of college basketball in Boston continue to impact the fandom of college basketball fans in Boston now?
I think, unfortunately, very little. I think unless people directly experienced it, this is a surprisingly forgotten moment. I mean, none of those schools are particularly powers right now. None of them draw especially well. I think part of the purpose of the book for me was to try to uncover this very significant moment in college basketball that had an impact both stylistically on the game and also in terms of cultivating some of its great coaches that I think it should not go unremembered. I mean, a lot of these guys I talked to, guys who played for Pitino, guys who played for Jim Calhoun during the early to mid-60s, a lot of them have never been interviewed before about this time period. I mean, a few of the guys went on and played in the NBA, and those guys have certainly talked about it here and there. But a lot of these guys who were kind of middling players in these teams, despite having played for these Hall of Fame coaches, really had nobody ever approached them before to talk about it. So I did over 100 interviews for the book and talked to dozens of people from each program. I talked to Calhoun extensively. I had a nice chat with Gary Williams. I was unable to get in touch with Rick Pitino for the book, but I hopefully gave a very vivid picture of this time and place.
Does it make you feel good? It should, but does it make you feel good that there is one of these stories that might have just, if you don't write this book, there's no documentation of this, and maybe it's kind of a lost story, and now by writing this book forever and ever, this documentation does exist?
Oh, I took that very seriously when I wrote that. I do a lot of freelance writing on sports and for different publications. That is one of the things that I really think about a lot when I'm writing. If I don't write this story, will anybody else capture this particular moment that has passed? And I think one of the things that's been most rewarding about this book is how much it meant to so many of the people I talked to for the book, that they had no idea this part of their life was going to be documented in such detail as it was in this book. So I'm glad the book is at least a testament to this particular time and place.
The name of the book is Boston Ball, Rick Pitino, Jim Calhoun, Gary Williams, and the Forgotten Cradle of Basketball Coaches. And it is available Amazon, local bookstores, wherever you normally get your books. You can find this.
Absolutely. Yeah. Go on Amazon. It's on sale right now on Amazon. Go get it.
Awesome. Boston Ball is the name of the book. Clayton Cotruder is the author. Clayton, great stuff. Thanks so much for taking some time with us this evening. Really appreciate the work that you put in to what was kind of a lost story. It's very cool.
Thank you. What a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you very much.
Very good. There's Clayton Cotruder joining us on the program again. Boston Ball. I got a kind of a review copy of the book, and going through it, there's just... If you're a basketball nerd, this is for you. And I enjoyed being able to see it. And again, these moments in time that help direct a sport in a certain direction, that's a bad way to say it, but you get what I'm saying. It's good that things like this are down on record. By the way, there's a potential upset brewing in the NCAA men's basketball tournament. NC State, the 11 seed, I didn't think they had much of a chance against Marquette today. Well, NC State is winning right now by 11, 46-35, and there's only about 11 minutes to go. Just make that 48-35. They just knocked down another shot. So if you're hoping for a double-digit seed, NC State's your one opportunity. Right now they are leading Marquette. We'll take a break. Have more in just a moment as we'll wrap up this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Lining and then get you to Cardinals baseball here on KMOX. Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name's Matt Pauly. Generally, I'd be thinking about around this time, you know, we'll get this last segment in, time to head home. But not tonight. We're going to be here for a while. Cardinals baseball this evening, game two, as they match up against the Dodgers. Zach Thompson on the mound. The lefty last year was 5-7 with a 4.48 ERA. Bobby Miller, a right-hander, will go for the Dodgers. Second-year player making his first start of the year last season. He was 11-4 with a 3.76 ERA. Few bits of news and notes out of Cardinals manager Oliver Marmol from his media session with the assembled media in Los Angeles earlier today. Dylan Carlson has received a cortisone injection in his shoulder. So that means for about the next 2-3 days, he's not going to do much of anything. Then he is going to start ramping up after that, and we'll see what things look like. How his shoulder responds is going to indicate how long this is going to take and how long he's going to be out. But the process, by him getting the cortisone shot, the process has at least gotten started for his return, and hopefully he is feeling better here in a couple, 2-3 days. Sonny Gray, He threw 36 pitches in 3 live innings in Florida today. So that is very, very, very good news for him. So he gets a 3-inning outing. And up next for him is he is going to make a rehab start in Memphis. And that rehab start is scheduled for Wednesday. So you would think he'll make 1 or 2 starts for Memphis. The first day that Gray is eligible to come off the injured list is Tuesday, April 9th. That is 6 days after the rehab start at Memphis. So if he can go 5 for Memphis on Wednesday, I wouldn't be shocked to see him pitching for the Cardinals on Tuesday, April 9th. That's a home game. Cardinals.com, if you're looking for tickets, I'm sure they can certainly take care of you. But Gray's return to this team is coming sooner than later, and that's a very, very important thing. Lars Nootbaar was part of those 3 live innings in Florida today. Reportedly, he took 8 live at-bats. That's a lot of at-bats. And Marmol said that they're going to talk a little bit to Nootbaar before figuring out if he's going to go to Memphis before rejoining the team. He's going to do some more work on the backfields coming up tomorrow, and if that goes well, then a plan is going to be put in motion. But we're talking about a scenario where Lars Nootbaar is back with the Cardinals within the next week or so. Tommy Edman is getting an MRI on April 3rd. That MRI is simply to verify that the healing is going well, and if it is on the wrist, he is going to start a swinging program soon. Essentially, Edman is at the start of the spring training process. So of all these guys that we talk about, Edman is the one who is furthest away, and I'm not saying that it's not going to be a good result on the MRI. There's no reason to think that, but what I would say is it's been this entire process, because when we got to spring, I got there on February 12th, I believe it was. The indication was that maybe Edman might miss the first couple games or something, might not quite be ready for the start of Grapefruit League play, but that he would be playing in spring training games. And clearly that didn't happen. The word that we got from one day to the next, that one day he would feel good, the next day he wouldn't feel good. So there wasn't, when you're healing, you want there to be like a somewhat stagnant line that's going up, or, you know, a straight line that's going up in terms of healing. And it was going up and down, and he was feeling different ways in different days. So it's important that the MRI does come back to show healing is going well. And at some point in time, the Cardinals will have some decisions to make, but Nootbaar seems to be pretty darn close. Gray is close as well. And then Edman may be a little bit behind when it comes to that group. I want to say thank you to all the guests who are on the program today. That was a fun show with the various folks that we were able to have. If you ever miss anything, you can always hear everything back at KMOX.com or the Odyssey app. Just get the Sports Open Line podcast. Everything is archived, so if you miss it live, you can listen back to it. But up next, we've got the 8 o'clock news, and then we have Cardinals baseball. It's the Cardinals, it's the Dodgers, game 2 of the 2024 campaign, and it's on the way next right here on KMOX.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the pitch, hit, and run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.